Prince Edward County Arts Council Art Scene is brought to you by Eno Gallery.
Hello to everyone. I'm Sarah Moran, and you're listening to Art Scene, the county arts show on 99.3 County FM. During this winter season, when everything's a bit quieter, I'm talking with a diverse group of artists who are also passionate about teaching. Today, I'm with Arwen Carpenter. Arwen is a queer dancer, writer, and dance educator who is devoted to decolonized art making. They grew up skipping along the shore of their parents' home on Salmon Point. Isn't that a wonderful picture? They hold an MFA in dance and choreography from New York University's Tisch School of the Arts and a Bachelor of Education from University of Toronto's OISE. Arwen is one of five co-creators of Flight Festival PEC, the festival of dance between earth and sky near Wellington. Hello, Arwen.
Hello, Sarah. Good morning.
Welcome to Art Scene.
Thank you so much. So good to be with you.
And there's lots to talk about. You just do such an amazing amount of things. Maybe we can chat about dance first.
Yeah.
When did you start dancing and how did you become a dancer, like decide that that's what you were going to be?
Yeah, well, I think like many kids, I started when I was young, 4 or 5 years old. I loved right away this sensation of, you know, being able to control my body. I remember, you know, like many people, when you first take your first dance lesson and you sit on the floor and you do point and flex. And I just remember looking at my feet going, oh, I'm making my feet go point and flex. And it's a funny revelation to recognize that we can say things with our movement. But I very clearly remember that at like 4 or 5 years old. And I became very good at it very quickly because I don't know why, but I just was kind of hyper-focused on it. Well, I just enjoyed the sensation so much. And I had a wonderful ballet teacher named Diana Vorps. I just was in love with ballet, the elegance, the passion. My teacher was very evocative in her emotional expression when she danced. And I continued dancing as a young teenager with a group in Toronto called the Canadian Children's Dance Theatre that does contemporary dance. And we got to perform as young children a lot. And I loved being on the stage and I loved playing a role and the magic of the limelight. It's kind of addictive. It's hard to leave. So that's how I started out. Yeah.
Andy, it's amazing that you knew that so young. So you must have been thinking about it as a career, I guess, when you went to New York.
Definitely. I also was lucky to get into teaching dance very early at this dance studio, the Canadian Children's Dance Theatre. Teaching, I find, is really, you learn how to teach through doing it. And so I kind of racked up some years teaching. Like I started when I was 15 and so by the time I was 22, 23, I was teaching at York University and then realized I needed a graduate degree to continue in that position. So I went to New York, yeah, to do a master's degree in dance, yeah, with the intention of continuing to teach in the university dance program.
I'm just so excited about the idea of dancing in New York. What was that like?
Oh, boy. It was unbelievably special. The graduate program had 14 dancers in it from around the world. The studios are on Second Avenue, right, you know, right over the street. And my experience there was remarkable in that 9/11 was actually our second day of school. So we started school on the Monday and then 9/11 was the Tuesday. And so we had all just met and we were all brand new to New York and we really didn't know what was happening. And it obviously had a terrific impact on our experience there. The experience of being in New York at that time among people who were experiencing such dramatic loss and devastation was something that changed me for sure, like my understanding of humanity. You know, there was sort of global impact and you could see in faces of all the people that you met, that everyone was changed. And so we did end up talking a lot about the role of art in a circumstance like that and how to express through our art making and our performing what was going on for us. Some people expressed like frustration that we couldn't be helping more, we couldn't be down at the site cleaning and digging and offering food, and then the gradual understanding that the work that we were doing as artists did have importance and significance to it as well.
And you touched there about the fact that you had gone there imagining that you were going to be coming back teaching. You're a very passionate, dedicated dance educator. What is it that excites you about teaching?
I love the exchange. I love the relation building. Being face to face with people as they're learning is an unbelievably exciting dynamic, especially teaching dance, because I believe that everybody has dance within them and a lot of people lose track of that. And so it's a little bit about uncovering or peeling away to find the dancer within everyone. And it happens very naturally with children because they haven't lost it yet. So children can dive right in into their dancer selves.
What do you have to peel away, do you think?
Yeah, well, Western culture in our lives where we sit at desks and we don't spend a lot of time really thinking about our bodies or being in our bodies and allows us to move freely or something that, you know, I like going to dance clubs. This was something I learned in New York was I worked with a dancer, Ronald K. Brown, who, you know, was trying to get us. We were very uptight sort of ballet dancers. He was teaching African dance, West African dance, and he wanted us to feel the beat. And we thought we were all, you know, very fancy dancers. And we thought, oh, this is silly. We know the beat. We understand the beat, but we didn't. And it took 90 minutes of walking on the beat for us to finally drop in to a sense of actually feeling the rhythm of the music through our whole bodies. That is something that should be innate to all of us, this connection, you know, in Indigenous worldview, the idea of the drum as the heartbeat. This, it's a very global understanding of the rhythm of the drum is the heart. And this is something that we should be able to connect with very innately. And yet it's harder for us. So, you know, a lot of people say, oh no, I don't dance. I'm not a dancer. I have two left feet. You know, you hear that a lot. And in fact, no, we peel away self-consciousness around that idea of how we're supposed to move, a lot of uptight energy around, oh, well, I don't want to look silly. Right.
Maybe that's why the idea people talk about dance as if you're dancing in the dark or dance as if no one can see you. I guess that's because of what you're talking about.
Yes. I love the idea of just dancing by myself in the kitchen, right, with no one watching. That's obviously like the most fun. But there is something to being witnessed as well.
What does that
mean? So when I'm teaching, you know, often in a dance class, we'll do some work and then we'll do it in two groups so that one group of dancers has an opportunity to observe the other. And that's where a lot of learning will happen because they'll see, oh, I noticed the way that dancer used weight to shift their transition and make it smoother. You notice things qualitatively about what other dancers are doing. And so you can really learn a lot from watching each other and also from being witnessed, from being seen, which for me was very important as a young dancer. I felt like that was where my true self was. I could be truly witnessed as a dancer in my body.
You do a lot of teaching here in the county, particularly with young people. And I know that you're going to be working in the Arts Council's County Arts Lab again with Kat and working with The Rock. I wonder what you particularly enjoy about youngsters over and above the fact that they don't have so much to peel away. What other things about them do you love working with them?
I do love the work that the County Arts Lab is doing in order to make this dance class accessible to everyone. And by that, I mean, you know, registering, like sometimes I think the dance classes got a reputation as being sort of something that's elite or something that's for, you know, people who have money or is for special people somehow. And the idea of making this accessible to everyone and also normalizing that, you know, boys can dance, people in bigger bodies can dance, people with various disabilities can dance. And this isn't something for just a special group of people. So I particularly applaud the County Arts Lab and the Prince Edward County Arts Council for the, their work that they're doing around equity and diversity in that respect. And so, yeah, the groups that Kat and I tend to work with there are very diverse, right? We got kids with wild ideas coming from all sorts of places, and they are very much informed by the natural landscape. You know, maybe they live on farms, maybe they're accustomed to running through grass and accustomed to connecting with trees and water. And so they are able to bring that innate understanding of nature into their dancing.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
You said something there, which makes me want to talk about your writing. You said something about people of all shapes and sizes. And it was shocking to me that you were considered too big to dance, particularly having seen you dance so beautifully.
That was, yeah, the real bittersweet part of my career was that I didn't end up having the career that I wanted to because I was considered too big. That began early adolescence and the pressure to lose weight as a young person, that, you know, being passed over for roles because something that I struggled with a little bit in the early years was this gendered notion of ballet, right? The girls are going to be over here. The skinny little girls are going to get picked up by the big, strong boys. Yeah. And I always felt too big, and I always felt like, oh, I didn't want to impose my weight on these poor little skinny boys. it was like awful. I didn't like that experience at all. And
so you've been writing about this?
That's right. Yeah, I have. I'm working on a memoir, and it talks about my early experiences as a dancer and gender and body image in those settings. And my work now to sort of counteract that. And a lot of, we're seeing a shift in the dance world for sure. But yeah, no, I mean, even in New York, even as a grad student, I was told to lose weight by the directors. And it's very common. And it was like, no, you can't come, you know. And I knew it. I would go to auditions and I knew I was better than the people who were getting picked, but I knew I was too big. And it got to me eventually, and that's why I sort of retreated into teaching and choreography rather than performing. But now, at age 50, with my new gender identity, I've recently transitioned and come out as a non-binary person, allowing me to move away from a gendered idea of how I'm supposed to perform, how I'm supposed to present. I feel like I've got this new lease, this new opportunity to be in this exact body exactly as it is without changing anything for anyone else and say, no, this is what what you see is what you get.
Builds on your point before about how when you're dancing and being seen to be your true self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've turned 50 and I certainly in their 40s is when a lot of dancers are retiring, but I'm looking at this part two, an opportunity to begin again. And so in that respect, I'm very much at the beginning of this discovery of what this performing career is going to be like. And I have been just beginning to go to dance classes again, thinking of myself as a brand new beginner and exploring, like, what is it to jump? What is it to move my arms? What is it to learn choreography, and how do I bring myself to it now? So it's, yeah, I'm full of energy about this new discovery and exploration.
What a wonderful thing to hear.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate.
Well, you've done it. You've created it.
Yeah, I mean, anyone could do that. A lot of people feel all my friends are turning 50 this year, you know, and feeling kind of down about it. And I just think, I don't know, this is part two, we're halfway.
In your description, you said something which I didn't fully understand, which was that you're devoted to decolonized art making. What does that mean to you? What does decolonized art making mean to you?
So our systems here on Turtle Island, our systems of education and all the structures that we work in have developed out of a colonial mindset. Often that has a power structure to it, where there is someone who's the authority, and then they're down here, there is someone who needs to learn, or there, you know, there's high art, there's ballet up on the stage, and then there, oh, there might be some community art, but it's not as worthwhile. And so decolonizing in one respect is about trying to get rid of this notion that some of this stuff is better than the other or more valuable. In a classroom setting, and this is, I think I started with trying to decolonize my teaching, moving away from the model of a teacher-fronted classroom where the teacher's the authority, and working instead in a circle where everyone has access to each other in the same manner. And it's again, an Indigenous worldview image of everyone having equal access to the fire and the warmth, if the fire's in the center, kind of thing. And that we are learning from each other and with each other, and that there is no authority. We all have a voice. And so that's one way of approaching it. Yeah. And again, I've always thought, while I do love to go to the theater and I love to see live performance, and I think live performance is incredibly important, how do we enable the audience to feel more connected to the dancers on stage? So something we do with Flight Festival, is we try to do a lot of facilitating connection between the artists and the audience, doing introduction before the show where the audience might get to meet some of the dancers and hear their thinking. So they've already got a sense. It's not this mysterious thing that we often, I hear people talk about modern dance or contemporary dance and they say, oh, I don't, or I didn't get it, or it was too mysterious for me. That's a concern that I'd like to be addressing through the work, is like, how to alleviate that pressure of feeling like there's an expectation on you as an audience member to get it, and recognize that these are just people, and we're just artists, we're just trying to, and we're figuring it out along with you. So we're inviting you into this journey of, you know, your experience is as valid as the experience of that of the artist. And we also with Flight are doing four branches with the Flight Festival, and they are education, community, connection, and performance. So as far as community, really important to be understanding what the needs are of the particular folks who might be coming to Flight. So Prince Edward County has an incredible group called Groove Tonic that meets on Tuesdays to do some dancing in the town hall. And choreographer Carol Anderson has connected with that group this year, and they are going to be working together and building a piece that will be presented on the stage, a collaborative community connection piece. Another aspect of Flight's work that has been important from the beginning is relation building with the people of Tiendanega, building friendships and connecting there. Last year, we offered a free hoop dance workshop taught by Barbara Daibo and Beanie John, two incredible hoop dancers on the land at Tiendanega at the community center for folks there. And so we're hoping this summer we are budgeting to have busing available for friends from Tiendanega to come and see our performances at Flight. And then vice versa, we're hoping to do some performances there on the land.
Well, we're looking forward to the Flight Festival. And thank you, Orin, for all you do here in the county to engage us in dance, and for your unique art making. And thank you for being here on the show today.
Oh, Sarah, thank you so much for all that you do and for highlighting the work of the artists.
It's fun. I've been speaking with Orin Carpenter, dancer, writer, and dance educator. Art Scene is co-hosted by Caitlin Thornton, Marianne Farrell, Cheryl Singer, and myself, Sarah Moran, every Friday. If you have an idea for a story to run on the show, just let us know at artscene@993countyfm.ca. Thank you for listening in to Art Scene here on The Voice of the County.